So today we are joined with Marty Schwartz, the founder and executive of Vehicles for Change. So Marty, the myth, the man, the legend, you know, I've known you for almost...
Legend in my own mind.
As we all should be. But I've known you for the better part of a decade, and there's a ton of stuff I really didn't know about you. And it makes me wonder what other things you've got hidden in your closet back there. But just to name some of these, I mean, obviously we know you're the president and founder of Vehicles for Change. It's a 23-year-old nonprofit that services Maryland and Virginia. We're going to talk a little bit about what VFC does and the impact it really has. Previously, you spent 15 years in education and athletics as a coach, administrator, development director. It says spare time was the tournaments and various NCAA basketball stuff and so forth, which is interesting, actually, because we've had other guests that talk a lot about sports. Mike Gill, actually, we spoke to earlier, mentioned some similar things. Mm-hmm. But I think what really interests me the most is your ability to motivate and keep people passionate about a culture and about a mission that your organization, you know, supports. You know, I've known you for over a decade now, or close to a decade, and it seems like the energy never subsides. It seems like you've created this sense of loyalty among your team that is just always there, and it's never ending. You know, how do you do that? I mean, I'm sure business owners all over the world want to know.
Well, you know, I think part of it is easier when you have a nonprofit that has a mission that we have, right? So,
fair enough.
You know, when you're running a business that is mission-driven, it makes life a lot easier to keep people excited about what we do. I mean, when you get to see someone who was incarcerated for 20 years and in 4 months they've turned their life around, they're making $50,000, $60,000 a year, they're getting back with their kids, and they've gotten away from that life of crime that they've known since they were 13 years old and now they're 45, it does make it easier. But, you know, like every business, there's days where you come in and cash flow's terrible and, you know, business isn't running the way you want it to. And part of it is I just think as the leader, we need to constantly provide that positive reinforcement and really come in with that positive attitude. And it's just something that I've always had and been able to do. You know, the glass is always full, not half full, but full. And so, you know, it's you just have to continue to bring that positivity to the organization. One of the things we did last year that every year at the beginning of the year, we take a word that's going to be the word that's going to drive the organization for the year. Mm-hmm. Last year, it was positivity. And so we wanted everybody to kind of drive that positivity, and we reinforced that all during the year. This year, it was innovation. So we wanted people to think, is because we're growing and we're growing the organization, we're looking at new opportunities. And so we wanted everybody to be part of that innovation that we drive the organization. I think it keeps people motivated and excited.
Got it. Now, do you think that's something you learned back in when you were a coach in your college days?
Man, that's a good question. I think part of it is part of your DNA.
Okay.
So I do think that's part of it. I think that, you know, my life as a coach did, you know, teach me that you have to maintain that motivation and keep people motivated. And, you know, I was lucky that most of my coaching career, I didn't go through any losing seasons, but we did have one or two, and they're tough. I mean, when you're going through and you go into the season and you think you're really good, kind of some of the stuff that the Ravens went through this year, and then all of a sudden you know, your top pitcher gets hurt and, you know, your catcher's injured, and now you're working with guys that you didn't think you were going to have to work with so early in the career, and you're in their career, and you're losing games, and guys are going, well, geez, it's a wasted year, and how do you keep them motivated and keep them moving forward? And so, yeah, I think a big part of it is from being involved in athletics and being in a team sport.
Yeah. You know, I think as leaders and managers and entrepreneurs, oftentimes we look at the management and not so much the coaching. Do you think there's a fine line between being a great coach versus a great manager?
I don't think it's such a fine line. You know, I think a great manager keeps things moving forward. They see the day-to-day and they think about the day-to-day. And I think a great leader really thinks more about, you know, the forest and the trees kind of thing, right? And so, you know, one of the things I always to teach my players, a term that I always had, was you have to think two plays ahead. And when you're on the field, you know, that's an important thing. And I teach my staff the same thing, is it's not just what today, but how does that impact tomorrow? And I think as leaders, we have to think more than two plays ahead, right? We're always thinking months ahead and games ahead and seasons ahead. And so you have to build toward that. And so I think that that's what keeps us motivated as leaders, as opposed to that manager who's managing the day to day.
Yeah, I think a manager would be analogous to like a position coach.
Yeah.
Versus the leader would be like a head coach or the manager of a baseball team.
Agreed.
That's about right.
Yeah, okay. I think that's pretty much.
And sometimes we have to be both, and that can be hard sometimes.
Really difficult. I mean, I've been doing that for a long time, and you know, when we just hired actually a COO, and so I'm excited to have somebody that's going to come in and kind of be that day-to-day manager, so that I can spend more of my time, you know, kind of being that leader, that person that's really pushing the organization down the road and making sure that we're going to grow and meet the goals that we want to over a 10-year period.
Yeah. I think the most successful people really have mentors and coaches that are often separate from the people within your organization. Someone you can bounce ideas off, topics, and you don't really have to worry about affecting the culture, because if it's a bad idea, you certainly don't want that going through the organization. So when you started Vehicles for Change and you were one of the founders, did you have a mentor or a leader to help?
Yeah, I really did. This guy named Jay Jago, who passed away not too long ago, was an unbelievable guy. I mean, Jay was a World War II glider pilot.
And wow. That,
yeah. Pretty amazing guy. And then, when they stopped having glider pilots because they all died, Jay was one of the few that did survive. He became a bombardier. But when he came out, he started an insurance company. He had he helped start Goodwill of D.C. He really? Helped start the Greater Washington Committee or the Chamber of Commerce. Brilliant man, just a brilliant man. But he also started a company that helped ex-offenders come out of prison and get jobs. And this was before anybody was talking about this kind of stuff.
Wow.
And so Jay was a guy that he and I would get together every 3 or 4 months and just really kind of run things by. And he helped keep me positive too, because when things, you know, early on, you know, we were robbing Peter to pay Paul, so to speak. And, you know, he was the guy that said, hey, look, you're doing great things and you're helping people. And as long as you're doing that, you know, things are going to work out. And so he was a guy that I could go to when things were bad and you can't go to your team and say, oh my God, you know, what are we going to do? Yeah. You know, he was a guy I could go to and say, hey, you know, keep me going here.
Yeah. You know, I've never seen that side of you. You've always been, to me, this huge person full of inspiration and always, you know, the glass half full or even overflowing at times. but you're right. In every business, in every organization, there's times where there's struggles. And sometimes you look back and think, you know, am I making the right decision? Vehicles for Change is probably no different. You know, what was it like for you in those early days when you started the business? What were those struggles?
Yeah, I mean, it was always a cash thing. Yeah. You know, one of the things that you know, particularly when you're in a business like ours, you have a tendency to want to help everybody, right? And I had to learn over the years that your money can only help so many people. And at some point in time, you're gonna push the organization over the edge because you're gonna spend too much money. And we really had to learn that we could only do so much, and we can't change the entire world. We could only change the families that we could impact. And we went through some really tough times. There was a time when they changed the tax law back in 2005 as far as car donations are concerned, and our car donations crashed and burned, and we generate about 60% of our revenue through cars that are donated. And I was literally planning on closing the organization.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it was in mid-2005, 2005, and and I had actually had the conversation with my assistant director, and I was going, I don't think we can make it another month.
Wow.
And we bought marketing and advertising on WTOP back in 2005, and donations started to go crazy.
Wow.
And, you know, and sometimes when you're doing what we do, you just, sometimes manna just falls from heaven. I mean, it's when you're doing good stuff, I mean, you just, sometimes it's just getting lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I completely agree with you. And the phrase manna falling from heaven is it hits home personally for me. I've experienced situations like that. And but when you're going through those hard times, are you transparent with the team?
It depends on how hard the times are getting.
Okay.
You know, at that point, yes, I was very transparent in saying, look, I'm not sure that we're going to make this, but if we all pull together, we'll do the best we can. And if we can't make it, you know, we did some great things and, you know, we were around for 6 years and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Not always. I'm not always transparent with the team. It depends on whether I feel like we're going to be able to pull out of it and we're going to be able to get there. Then I just kind of keep that positive outlook and move forward. So it really depends on the level of stress that we're under.
No, that makes sense. I mean, you certainly don't want fear spreading through the organization because that does affect the culture and affects how people perceive the brand and, you know, what they say to others and how they become ambassadors of the organization. So that, you know, that completely makes sense. And you had mentioned that you had a coach you could talk to for those things.
And the nice thing about a nonprofit, too, is we have a board of directors.
Yes.
So I can go to my board of directors, and these are brilliant business people, and I can sit down with them and say, hey, you know, we're struggling. We got issues, and we need help to try to figure these out. And, you know, I have 16 people on our board that are just brilliant business people across the spectrum.
Yeah. And I knew there's some private organizations that actually hire a board as well. For like an advisory board and so forth. So yeah, it's great to have those things if you can have them.
Yeah.
But we've kind of really danced around vehicles for change, you know, through this conversation. And you guys do amazing work. So can you just, for the listening audience, tell everyone what Vehicles for Change does and the impact that you've had?
Yeah. So we originally started Vehicles for Change to address the transportation issue that people living in poverty face day in and day out in trying to get to employment. So, you know, if you live in poverty, if you live in Cherry Hill, if you live in West Baltimore and you're living in poverty, getting to an entry-level job or a mid-level job by public transportation is really, really difficult. Mm. The Brookings Institute did a study. It takes more than 90 minutes for somebody without a car. And so we provide cars to those families so that they can access employment. And what we've seen is that car not only impacts the financial security of that family, but it makes a huge difference in the opportunity that the children have.
I see.
So we see the children are able to go to after school activities. So they're getting better education opportunities. They're going to and playing athletics because if mom doesn't have a car, and most of the folks who get cars from us are single moms, if mom doesn't have a car, you don't get to play sports because you can't get there.
Oh, wow.
You can't get to a doctor's appointment. You can't get to decent grocery stores. So most of our folks that get cars from us say they now have hope that they can escape generational poverty.
Wow.
So, and we're seeing that. We're seeing that car making a difference. And then in 2016, we launched what we call the Full Circle Auto Repair and Training Center. Hmm. So we now train individuals, most of whom are recently released from incarceration, to be auto mechanics.
Oh, wow.
So it was actually interesting. I was watching a show last night that was talking about a situation that happened in Massachusetts where they were impacting folks coming out of prison. And in a negative way. And they constantly talked about how difficult it was for somebody with a record to get a job. You know, we as a society force people, once you've been incarcerated, to carry that burden with you the entire rest of your life.
Yeah.
And getting opportunities is minimal. And so we've been very lucky in being able to work with individuals and bring them out of incarceration, teach them a marketable skill. And in 5 years, we've trained over 180 individuals. We have 100% placement rate. So every single person that's graduated from our program is able to get a full-time job. And they're working in the automotive field where they're making a really nice living. Our guys now are starting between $22 and $25 an hour.
Wow, that's incredible.
So it's a big deal. And our recidivism rate is less than 3%. Out of 180 individuals, only 5 have gone back to prison.
Wow.
The national recidivism rate is north of 70%.
70%? You're kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, so when you think about why people go back to prison, do you guys have a handle on the behaviors? Your program so successful where others aren't?
It's not rocket science.
Okay.
So when you come out of prison, first off, typically they take you back to the neighborhood where you did your crimes. Hmm. So now we've put them back into an environment where They don't have a lot of opportunity. They can't get a job because they have this burden. They have to go to parole once or twice a week. They typically have to get drug tested once or twice a week, and they have to pay for all those things.
They have to pay for
them? They have to pay for all those things. So you're coming out of prison, and you may have a $400 to $800 bill you have to pay every month. And if you don't pay that, potentially crazy. They could send you back to prison.
Wow, that's crazy.
It is unbelievable.
So they're basically set up for failure.
They are set up for failure. Maryland does a great job compared to other states in providing other supports. So while they're incarcerated, there's a number of training programs that they can go through, automotive being one of them. Mm-hmm. So we work with the automotive instructors so that when they are released, we bring them into our program that's a paid program for 4 months so that we make sure that when they graduate from our program, I can go to an employer and say, you have a high-quality employee and a very good technician. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's again, not rocket science, that if we can provide somebody with a second chance opportunity where they can make a decent living, mm-hmm. and it leads to a career, and we can get them out of the environment that they were in prior to going into prison, it's a success story all day long.
I mean, it doesn't only change that person's life, but it also changes the neighborhoods they come from, and it starts to create an end to, like you said, some of that generational poverty and all kinds of other issues that, you know, neighborhoods and cities and whatnot experience.
Absolutely.
That's absolutely incredible. So you've been doing this now for 23 years, I think?
23 years, yeah.
How many people do you know? How many people you've impacted?
Well, we've awarded over 7,500 cars to families.
Wow.
So it's about 25,000 individuals that we've impacted through car ownership. And again, we've trained 180 individuals. Most of those individuals are males. We had about 10 to 15 females that have still come through our program. But the men are getting back with their families. And that's the thing that's important, is that they're now getting back with the children. A lot of our guys say they want to be the dad that they didn't have when they were growing up. So they were in that environment that led them to a situation where they had to learn to survive.
Wow. Now, doing this for so long, I mean, was there any one particular person or family that you really remember that really kind of tugs at your heartstrings?
Wow, there's a lot. you know,
it's
but.
Be.
You know, particularly coming through the training program to see, you know, most of our individuals have come into our training program, started getting involved with the criminal justice system at 13 to 15 years old.
Wow.
You know, grew up in pretty tough neighborhoods and pretty tough environments, and really didn't have a whole lot of choice. I mean, we talk about, you know, and you see stories about how so-and-so grew up in an inner city neighborhood and you know, was successful, but man, those stories are the few and far between. It's more the guys that are coming to our program and getting that success on the back end. And so I think, you know, we did a video actually of one of the guys, Dutch, who was incarcerated for 20 years for armed robbery, for assault with a deadly weapon, and came out, and he's been out now and working for 4 years, is now a foreman at the program he's in. He's in a business where they do road automotive repair, but
okay.
For trucks. is married, has two kids, comes back all the time and talks about, you know, in the video, he actually says at the end of the video that Vehicles for Change didn't change his life, it saved his life. And he has told us many times, he said, if it wasn't for Vehicles for Change, he said, I'd either be dead or back in prison for life.
Wow.
So so that, you know, that's a huge deal for us. And to be able to have that kind of impact on families is awesome.
You're right. The ability to have that kind of a mission speaks to your culture and the motivation your team has. I don't know that private businesses can really replicate that type of environment very easily anyway. So that's incredible. So let's see. So you were trained as an accountant. You were in athletics, an entrepreneur. You started various companies, and you started a nonprofit, Vehicles for Change. I mean, what's next? I mean, what's
retirement.
The 5-year retirement? is that really what's next?
I'm getting close. I've told my board that I'm 66. I told the board that in 4 years, you know, I'm pretty much planning on stepping away.
Okay.
They already told me that I had to be the board chair for 4 years. But, you know, what I'd really like to do is take kind of all the information that I've learned over the years and help other nonprofits kind of build social enterprises and build sustainable organizations. So I think that's maybe the next step, is to spend some time and working with, you know, other folks that are trying to make this work and can't figure it out.
Got it. So, I mean, to everyone listening, I'm sure they're just as inspired by this story as I am. And if they want to get involved, if they want to help Vehicles for Change like I do, how can they do that? What do you recommend for them?
Yeah, so reach out to me. I mean, we got a lot of opportunities. One of the easy ways is bring your car to one of our shops and get it repaired.
Okay.
So we have three locations now, one in Baltimore City, in Waverly on Greenmount Avenue. We're in Halethorpe, we're on Washington Boulevard, and we're now in Hyattsville on 50th Avenue down there. So folks can bring their car if they have a car. Car donations are incredibly hard to come by right now because mm-hmm. of the industry and the way car prices are going through the roof and how limited they are to find. We're having a really difficult time getting cars donated, so we're not able to help very many families. But you know, those are two easy ways that, okay. you know, everybody has to get their car fixed.
Yeah.
So, you know, bring it to us. If they have a fleet of vehicles, a company, we can help them save a lot of money, and all the money goes back to our training program.
Got it. Now, you can accept car donations from anywhere in the country, right?
Anywhere in the country.
Got
yes.
it. Yes. That makes great sense. So, well, Marty, I really appreciate you being here with us today. You've done an amazing job with the organization. I have no doubt it'll continue to be a success and really impact everyone that you touch. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.